Hour number two, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday. He's Big Joe. I'm Chase McCabe. Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier on the ones and twos. And our favorite, the one and only, Tim Hasselbeck, head coach at Innsworth and also ESPN NFL analyst, joins us now. Timmy, what's up?
What's up? How you guys doing?
We're good. We're trying to figure out what's going on with a local quarterback and where he's going to play college football next year, because that seems to be up in the air right now. That there are reports that Jared Curtis has flipped to Vanderbilt, but then there are reports that he hasn't. So just kind of playing the wait and see game right now.
I think he was one that reported that it happened.
Yeah, right. So that, I mean, that's a pretty good source if that is him. But I mean, look, you saw him firsthand, yeah. Played up against him. I mean, do you think he'd be ready next year to start as a true freshman?
I think it's always hard to tell, just because like the mental demands of a quarterback are drastically different from high school to college. Most cases, you know, obviously level of competition changes drastically as well. And I think that, you know, unfortunately what happens is kind of what, you know, really what happens in the NFL as well, is whether a guy's ready or not kind of isn't the factor. It's who's getting paid is going to play. So, you know, I think that really ends up being the story. So, you know, I mean, that's the thing for me, just knowing what I know about college football from calling games, you know, in college for 5 years now, also kind of being, you know, not far from it, coaching high school football and talking to these college coaches. The reality is there's very little competition, I guess is what I should say. Like there's very little competition. And sometimes it works out where the guy getting paid is playing well enough and he should be the guy that's playing. But sometimes it works out where the guy that you're paying is not the best quarterback on your roster. So, you know, ultimately, like whether he's ready or not, you know, chances are, like, let's just say he's at Vandy. If he's at Vandy, he's going to be making more money than anyone else at Vandy. So he'll play, period. Like, that's, right. That's how it goes.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Now, looking at the Titans, and I nobody wants to believe what I'm about to say, but how much with Cam Ward? We've seen the good, we've seen the bad, we've seen the ugly. Last week was not good at all. And there's just, it's been a very up and down year. But how much of that is, in his mind, he's having to battle through being a rookie in the National Football League. His coach has already gotten fired, so he's gone through two play callers. Okay. He knows the coaching staff is not going to be here next year, at least most of them are not going to be here next year. He has a poor offensive line. He has a hurt receiver group and doesn't have a lot of weapons to throw to. So how much is it concerns of his development, and how much is it, hey, just get me to next year and this offseason and let's try this again?
Yeah, I think, I mean, listen, substitute teacher. I mean, that's what this is, right? And so, you know, when you think of it that way, you're like, okay, well, like, are you really going to do the assignment? Are you really going to, you know, are you really going to pay attention? Are you like, and so I think I compared the scenario a little bit to the Urban Meyer year for Trevor Lawrence. And unfortunately, that's what it is. Now, you know, look, it is your job now. He does seem like a mature guy. And so, you know, it's different than, you know, any experience you'd have in the past, because in some ways you look at it and you're like, look, I'm under contract for, you know, potentially 5 years. And so I'm not going anywhere right now. I can kind of do what I want. There seems to be no consequence. And so you do have to fight that urge. And so I think that, you know, I think it's a challenging place to be. And I think some of it just depends on the guy. I'd say, like, all right, am I willing to get coached by Mike McCoy, who, you know, is a guy that's coached quarterbacks in this league for a long time, and, you know, eat up as much as I can of knowledge of, you know, from him, try to play as well as I can, and then just be able to, you know, use that to help me going forward with whatever new system I learn. Like, that could be the posture and approach, but it also might not be. So I just think that, you know, I think that it's all about how he's going to handle the situation. And, I don't think you really know unless you're sitting next to him every single day seeing how he's doing it.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck on the Chase and Big Joe Show. Tim, and I don't feel sorry for Mike McCoy because he's getting paid a lot of money and he's coaching the NFL. But how difficult is his job to be an interim coach on what is possibly one of the worst football teams we've ever seen?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because, you know, most of the assistant coaches are spending the vast majority of their time looking for their next job. You know, they're not necessarily getting ready for the next opponent as much as they are saying, like, you know, networking, trying to figure out where they're going to go. So I think that, you know, that would be one of the first things. And then I think that, you know, then you look at the team and the talent and the buy-in from the team. Like, I can remember, I'm not going to say who it was, but I was on a team that had a coaching staff that was all getting fired. They knew they were getting fired. We played a game before Christmas, and the coach was like, look, if we win, everybody's off until Thursday. And I was like, hold up. Like, Thursday? Like, because we're going to play the next Sunday. Like we're going to get our doors blown off because, like, we're not practicing until Thursday. But, like, everyone at that point was kind of like, look, man, like, everyone knows the deal here. We're all out. Like, U-Hauls were packed. So, yeah, it's hard. It's not a normal environment where guys are committed to be coaching in. It's just not.
You know, what's funny is that, you know, we've had callers and people texting like, well, nobody wants that job. Nobody's going to take that job. And I'm like, you do understand there's only 32 of these jobs in the world. People are going to want this job, right?
Correct. And it's a good city. It's, you know, it's a division that you would think is winnable. But more than that, there's 32 of them. And so when you think about things people have said in the past, oh, the Browns job's a terrible job. Oh, Jacksonville's a terrible job. Who'd want to go to Carolina with that owner? All of those things. You know, why would someone want to go to Denver? They're saddled with that Russell Wilson contract. Like, all of those things. Like, there's 32 of them. They pay a lot of money. You're coaching in the National Football League. And look at the way that these things flip. Like, Kansas City Chiefs may not make the playoffs. The Ravens are 6-6 right now. You know, like the Bears, you know, are leading their division. So, yeah, like, absolutely, they're all good jobs. And, you know, unless you have the choice of, you know, a bunch of them, guys are taking whichever one they can get to coach in the National Football League, to have a chance to compete at the highest level. And you never really know when you're going to kind of, you know, strike gold. Like, you don't know. And so I think that, you know, I like, it's a great job because there are a lot of coaches that are coaching in college right now and making a lot of money that would take them.
Oh, absolutely. We had a discussion today about Will Levis, Tim, about when he comes back. Does he have, I'm going to say, a future, but look, he's got a rocket arm, and would they bring him back in competition with Cam, or should you just let Will Levis just go down the road?
Yeah, it's too early to give Cam Ward legitimate competition. Do you think about how fast things fell apart in Indianapolis? I guess they got through year two before they acknowledged, like, hey, we need to develop some competition. And that was with Anthony Richardson getting hurt twice. So I think it's way too early to be like, yeah, we're competing. Cam Ward's going to be the starting quarterback next year, period. Now, like, I don't think it's a bad idea to, because guys do get hurt, because there is not trade value, because the organization at one point felt like, you know, he's a borderline first-round draft pick. I think it's a good idea. He's an inexpensive backup to say, yeah, like, we're keeping him. Like, these are our quarterback one and quarterback two next year. This is who they are. And we're going to develop them in their new offense. And honestly, if we can, you know, if we can be in a situation where, you know, you, for whatever reason, Will Levis has a chance to play and he plays well, well, now he's tradable.
But would they not benefit from finding a veteran that could be the backup, that knows his role, yeah, is not competing, like knows what he's coming in to do?
Sure.
And also kind of be that, you know, mentor to Cam.
Yeah, sure. But, okay, so, like, yes, maybe. But, like, the problem is is, okay, like, who is it? Okay, first off.
I'll tell you who I would go get. I'd go get Mariota.
Okay. So, and what do you think he would cost?
I'd have to look at what he's making now, but, I mean, usually backups, aren't they around $3 to $4 million?
No, I think high-end backups are going to be over $5 million.
Okay.
And then you're like, all right, so we're – and listen, because you have a quarterback on a rookie deal, it's not like you can't.
And they have cap space, so, I mean, they
– yeah, it's not like you can't pay somebody. But, like, well, you know, and he'd have to want to come back here, and it would have to be, you know, better than whatever the market is offering him. So, like, it's not a terrible one, but he'd have to want to come back.
Sure.
So, like, that's my thing. Like Case Keenum, you know, is in the league. You know, like, Joe Flacco, you know, is still playing. But, like, you're not going to be able to get all those guys. And a bunch of guys aren't going to be super excited about coming and being in a situation where they know they're the backup. Then you have guys where you're going to go, like, do you really want Carson Wentz over Will Levis? Like, I don't know. Like, do you? Like, I'm not sure you do. And Kirk Cousins is not going to be available for that price. And so, like, you know, you then are back. Now you're in, like, the Mason Rudolph, Drew Luck, you know, business. So, like, that's the only thing I would say about it. Like, do I believe it's a good idea to have a backup quarterback that can win you a few games? Absolutely I do. And Mariota can do that. But I also think that, you know, you get better, like, you know, don't chase it too much, because, you know, then you're going to be paying a guy that's maybe a better player than your young quarterback, and that guy's probably trying to still play some football.
Yeah, that's fair. We'll have more with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday, continuing with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN. Tim, Joe Burrow being back for the Bengals is going to do what for that division?
I think it's going to give the Bengals a chance because of where that thing sits. Now, it's probably too little too late, just because, you know, here we are with, I guess, 5 weeks left. You know, I don't think they're going to be able to make up that ground, especially when you consider, like, you know, all the divisional games that will happen that, you know, presumably won't be one-sided. So, you know, it'll be, you know, Pittsburgh or Baltimore. But I think it's, you know, it doesn't make it – him coming back doesn't make it any more clear, because, you know, you're just going to see, you know, I think competitive games in that division, and with them, you know, with 6-6, you know, being the top record in that division, it's going to be pretty weird to see, you know, who ends up winning it and what the final record is.
Yeah. How intrigued are you now by the AFC South with Houston's resurgence?
Yeah, I think it's a big deal because it's, you know, it's Houston's resurgence. They're playing really good defense. You know, I don't think they have a brutal schedule or anything like that. And then when you look at, you know, the Colts, their quarterback's got a broken leg, and, you know, they're currently behind Jacksonville, but have two games against Jacksonville. So, you know, I think you look at the Colts and be like, are they about to go play their best football? Like, you know, it's hard to think that they will with a quarterback who's as hurt as Daniel Jones is. And then you think of, you know, what their schedule looks like, which is, you know, not an easy one, and two really important ones against a team that already, you know, has the edge on them.
Has Mike McDaniel maybe done enough to save his job?
Yeah, it's an interesting – I think that one all depends on, you know, where the owner's head is at in terms of willingness to make a move and what that will do for the organization, because I do think it's hard to argue that, you know, those guys have not done a good job rallying the troops, you know, with a couple of good wins and performances. But, you know, I think it's, you know, also what you think of the direction of, you know, the direction of the franchise under his leadership. You know, Eric Mangini said to me a few times, you know, when we were working together at ESPN, he's like, the biggest thing about, you know, winning and losing games and keeping your job or not is when it happens. Lose games at the beginning of the year, but win them at the end of the year, like, you're probably going to keep your job. Lose them at the end of the year, like, you know, like, and that's what everyone remembers, you're going to lose your job. And I think that, you know, at the time I'm like, yeah, I think it kind of makes sense. I don't know if that's totally true. I think it kind of I'm like buying into it more and more now because just it feels like that's maybe what could happen in Miami.
Yeah, you're right. The Titans take on the Browns Sunday, and talk about a disaster franchise. They're just as bad as the Titans are up there. You got Shador, you got Dylan Gabriel. I mean, what's going on up there? I know Shador's going to start on Sunday, but he looked really bad on Sunday versus the Niners. I mean, what's happening there, Tim?
Yeah, I think that I think they got to find out more about Shador. And, you know, one game's not enough of a sample size. And quite frankly, two games isn't enough of a sample size. And so I'm pretty sure that they're playing him because they need to know what they have in him. Now, what they've done there is, I think, called the games in a way that's made it even harder to figure out if he can play or not. I mean, you go back to the first week he started, every third and eight plus, like they threw a screen. And even this past week, you know, while they did get a few more plays in the passing game, it was a very conservative game plan in terms of how they called it. And so, you know, they're trying to win games because they're trying to keep their job and they've got a really good defense. But I think what's strange is that, you know, they've not called the game in a way to figure out what they have in Shador. And because I think they've tried to kind of protect him like you would really any other young quarterback that's thrown out into an environment, you know, with an offense that's struggling.
And they just – I mean, I can't – look, I watched him in college a lot because I was very interested in him. I mean, there's some games he got the hell beat out of him and he stood in the pocket and delivered. So I think there's talent there, but when you tell me they're running screen passes on third and eight and not the opportunity, I mean, like, what is going on in Cleveland? That's just terrible.
Yeah, it's my understanding, like saying I'm reporting this. I thought he was a very good player at Colorado as well. I thought he was tough. I thought he was a good prospect. I probably said to you guys, like, the big thing for him was, you know, there definitely was a limit because of his physical ability. I think for some people it's like, wait, what? Like, it's Deion's kid. Deion's like the best athlete, you know, potentially ever. Like, his son, you know, doesn't have, you know, physical traits that are, you know, off the charts. And he just doesn't. Like, you know, he has, you know, he had physical skills that, you know, were not traits of first rounders. And, but I did think that he was good at playing the position at Colorado. So like he kind of understood how to play the position. Now he had good players around him. They did a good job with him at Colorado. And so, you know, like, is he a starter in the NFL? Like I don't believe that he is. And so I think that they're managing it, you know, much like teams that, you know, play guys that are, you know, a third round pick who, you know, maybe don't have the physical tools or maybe mentally aren't fully, you know, there and ready yet to kind of take the reins of a pro offense. I think that's exactly what's going on there. I think that's exactly where Cleveland is.
It just drives you crazy. Let me ask you this. At what point does Dan Campbell being cute and going for two cost him his job?
Ooh, cost him his job. I think he's going to be pretty safe for a while. Cost him a playoff spot. Like, that maybe happened already.
Right. Fourth and seven. Okay, we're going for it.
A good job there. You know, he was so bad that they were so bad in Detroit that I think there's a lot of equity built up in terms of the toughness and identity of that organization that I think he's got some time. And I think he's got some time to make some mistakes without them, you know, pulling the plug. But, yeah, I do think the blanket aggressiveness has cost them wins. And when you look at the NFC North, they could easily, and really the NFC West as well, like Detroit could end up being the best team in the NFC North and not making the playoffs at all.
Crazy.
Because you just look at how it stacks up, like strength of schedule, all those things. And I would take that game against the Eagles. I forget if it was Sunday night or Monday night. Maybe it was Sunday night. It was really windy. No one was throwing the ball well. I think it was like a 15-9 game or something like that. And they were too aggressive, and it cost them the game. And so I think that I think that, like, in all these analytics or all of these, hey, like, we're just going to go for it and be aggressive. Like, we are at a time of year where weather is now a factor. And if you don't pay attention to the weather and how it affects a passing game and how it affects a team's ability to score at the end of the half or end of a game, then like, I don't think you're coaching right. I don't. Like, so I'm all for, you know, smart football, understanding percentages. I'm all for, you know, being aggressive if you love calls and all those things. I do think there can be a new age of football in terms of how you manage situations. But something that's never changed, when it's really windy out, it's hard to pass the football.
Right.
Tim, real quick.
And it's also hard to kick field goals.
That too. Apparently, if it's harder for others than some. But two quick ones for you. Are the Bears a prime example of right coach, right quarterback combination? And is that something that teams like the Titans need to pay attention to?
Yeah, I mean, it clearly has worked out that way. I do think the quarterback is very talented. I do think the coach is really good. I think one of the things about the coach that people have lost a little bit of sight of is they run the football. Like, that's a good example of when did they play? Friday after Thanksgiving against Philadelphia. You know what they did? They ran the ball for like 270 yards, right? So, yeah. Like, I think what's a great combination for everybody is having guys that dominate up front. When you, like, listen, it's kind of one of these things, like, all right, Captain Obvious, but like, when teams are winning up front, they win football games. Unless their quarterback is just awful and making boneheaded mistakes to cost you the game. If you can be competitive and win up front on the offensive and defensive line, you will always have a chance to be competitive as long as your quarterback plays at an adequate level. And so, like, that to me is the story. Like, that's, look at the Bills. The Bills did not pass the ball great the other day. You know what they did? They ran duo about eight different times for, you know, 80 yards, right? Like, I think James Cook had 31 carries against the Pittsburgh Steelers. So, like, when you look at the Bears win against the Eagles, like, they had two backs go for over 120 yards.
It's been interesting. All right, real quick, you can probably make this case for the AFC two, but it's a little more, I think, obvious. In the NFC right now, I see 10 teams that can make the playoffs. Three of those are not going to be able to because of the numbers. How do you think that shakes out? Because this has been fascinating right now. I mean, Dallas is surging at the right time. They've won three in a row. Philly's going the wrong way. Chicago's won five in a row. Green Bay's won three in a row. Detroit's hanging in there, but who knows? The South, I think, is between Tampa or Carolina is going to win that division and make it. And then the NFC West, everybody not named Arizona, is making a case to win it. But again, three good teams go home. How do you see it right now?
Yeah, so, I mean, well, like I said, I guess I'll say that. Like, I think the tie is going to help Green Bay. So I think we could see Detroit with seven wins, you know, is the odd team out when you consider that, like, San Francisco, Seattle, and Los Angeles all already have nine wins, right?
Yep.
So, you know, so if they're a team that's out, I got to knock two others out. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basically. Dallas probably out.
Yeah, I think they've probably got too far to go just in terms of, like, you know, they're sitting there at six wins. Now, that tie, like, the tie is undefeated in my head when I try to do these projections because, it helps people so much. But, like, yeah, so if I'm saying Detroit's out, Dallas is going to have to be out, which is wild because they're maybe playing as well as anybody. And then, you know, Carolina, did you have them in there?
It's going to be Tampa or Carolina. I don't see both
of
them.
Yeah, and I think Tampa's the better team. You know, Baker's injury not being super significant, I think, is a big deal. The fact that they were able to win that game this past weekend, I think, obviously, ends up being helpful. So, you know, having played, you know, one less game than Carolina already and having seven wins, you know, I'm going to say that Tampa's the better team and that they're in. And so those would be the three. And so, you know, then I'm saying Seattle and San Francisco. You know, the interesting thing for me that makes me uneasy about San Francisco, they've just had so many injuries on the defensive side of the ball that I just like how much they can you know, hang in there, I'm not sure.
Tim Fortlego, our question of the day is, what's the most expensive speeding or driving ticket you've ever gotten? What's the most expensive one you've ever gotten?
Okay, so I was going to ESPN one Sunday morning. There was no one on the road, I-84 in Connecticut. I was going downhill, but I was going more than 20 miles per hour over the speed limit.
Uh-oh.
So it led to being charged with reckless driving. And so I then had to hire a lawyer and go to court.
Oh, boy.
So I'm not laughing at what happened, but the
fact that
I've heard of that.
You had? Did you get out of it?
But so it was like one of those things. Yeah, I did. And like, and that's just a whole nother shady story about lawyers and whatever. But like the reality of it is, like, let's say the speed limit was like 55, which shouldn't have been, like, in the middle of nowhere, Connecticut on I-84. And then I was going downhill. So I think I was going like 77 miles per hour downhill. No one else, like, unaware. And like, you know, I never pulled out like the, oh, hey, you know, I'm going to ESPN. But like, I tried it. The officer was not having it. And yeah, that one was not. Learned a valuable lesson. So never, hey, never speed, but certainly never go more than 20 miles per hour over the speed limit.
Thank you for that, buddy.
I think Kirby Smart is going to call me, have me give a speech.
Tim, appreciate the time as always, my friend. We'll talk next week.
All right, see you, fellas.
See ya. Tim Hasselbeck joining us here on the program, as he does every Tuesday at 1. We'll react to some of that and much more. Coming up next, Chase McJoe, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel here on 102.5 The Game.